D-Radio Wissen. Hörsaal. Rein in den Elfenbeinturm. Es gilt das gesprochene Wort. In Universitäten, Akademien und Forschungszentren. Die großen Köpfe der Vergangenheit. Die besten Hirne der Gegenwart.
Mit Katrin Ohlendorf. Heute The Lability of the Differentiated State von Sir Martin John Evans. Expect the unexpected. Damit schließt der britische Genetiker Martin Evans den Vortrag über Zelldifferenzierung, den wir gleich hier im D-Radio-Wissen-Hörsaal hören werden. Er fordert sein Publikum damit auf, wach zu sein und die Augen offen zu halten für Unerwartetes. Er hat sein Forscherdasein offenbar an diesem Motto ausgerichtet. Zumindest hat er erfolgreich Ideen verfolgt, für die er noch in den 80er Jahren Skepsis erntete und die heute als wegweisend für die Stammzellenforschung gelten. Martin John Evans wurde am 1. Januar 1941 in England geboren. Er studierte am Christ's College der Universität Cambridge und später am University College London. Er trägt einen Doktortitel sowohl in Philosophie als auch in Naturwissenschaften. Schon während seiner Promotionszeit unterrichtete er bereits am Institut für Anatomie und Embryologie des University College London, eine Tätigkeit, die er bis 1978 ausübte. Anschließend unterrichtete er an der Abteilung Genetik der Universität Cambridge. 1994 dann wurde er zum Professor ernannt. Von 1999 bis zu seiner Emeritierung war er Professor für Säugetiergenetik und Leiter des Fachbereichs Biowissenschaften an der Cardiff University in Wales. Der Medizin-Nobelpreis wurde ihm zusammen mit Mario Capecchi und Oliver Smithies im Jahr 2007 verliehen. Für bahnbrechende Entdeckungen im Bereich embryonaler Stammzellen und der DNA-Rekombination bei Säugetieren. Die Kombination der Forschungsansätze der drei Preisträger ermöglichte die Entwicklung sogenannter Knockout-Mäuse. Bei diesen Tieren werden die Erbanlagen mit Hilfe embryonaler Stammzellen gezielt verändert, indem bestimmte Gene ausgeschaltet werden, also ausgenockt, zu Deutsch K.O. geschlagen, kann deren Funktion ermittelt werden. Ein vereinfachtes Beispiel, wenn bei einer Maus zum Beispiel ein bestimmtes Gen manipuliert wurde und sie verkürzte Beine hat, so lässt sich daraus schließen, dass das entsprechende Gen für den Beinwuchs zuständig ist. Evans Forschung sorgte dafür, dass sich entsprechende veränderte Tiere überhaupt schaffen ließen. Solche Tierforschung wird natürlich auch kritisch gesehen, für den Mensch allerdings hat sie Vorteile. Unter anderem werden heute entsprechende Mäusestämme zur Erforschung menschlicher Krankheiten eingesetzt, zum Beispiel in der Diabetes- oder auch der Krebsforschung. Martin Evans Vortrag, den er im Rahmen des 61. Nobelpreisträgertreffens in Lindau am 29. Juni dieses Jahres gehalten hat, dreht sich allerdings nicht um Knockout-Mäuse, sondern um Zelldifferenzierung, also, vereinfacht, die Spezialisierung von Zellen für verschiedene Aufgaben. Er geht dabei auf jüngere Forschung ein, die zeigt, dass das Dogma, dass Zellen nicht von einem differenzierten Zustand zu einem anderen wechseln können, überdacht werden muss. Genug aber der Vorrede, hören Sie nun also Sir Martin John Evans mit seinem Vortrag The Lability of the Differentiated State.
Well, now for something completely different. I'm going to talk to you about the lability of the differentiated state. Well, normally, during the course explain that title. But normally, of course, lineages of cells and the stability of the differentiated state has for long been a dogma in developmental biology. And of course, I wouldn't be standing here, staying upright, if all the cells in my body were continuously changing. The structure and function of the body depends on the integrated but autonomous action of a large number of different cells, all of which are specialized, i.e. differentiated. Therefore, of course, all of them developed from single egg, and the proliferation is accompanied by the differentiation. Now, during development and in the adult, cells do not typically change from one type to the other. Now, of course, having said that, development is all about cells changing from one type to the other. So immediately we can put down a marker that actually the differentiated state is not stable. It is something which changes during development. Now, I can give you an example of this, and an example from very early mouse embryo. At the top here, we have an egg dividing and dividing to a clump of 16 or so cells, which are loosely attached, the so-called morula. They then compact down, they start to form a cavity, and eventually become this structure on the middle right, which is the blastocyst, which is comprises an outer layer of cells, which pump liquid, different, and an inner layer, so-called the inner cell mass. And if we take that compacted, or take the morula before it compacts, decompacted, every cell is the same and can go back to form part of the inner cell mass and indeed part heart of all of the mouse. The cells, on the other hand, after compaction, there are inside cells and outside cells, and the inside cells can do that chimerization, but the outside cells have become already specialized. If we put them into a blastocyst, nothing happens. If we put them into a uterus, they will implant as though they were an embryo. The inside cells, on the other hand, if we put them into a uterus, will just die. So you're already getting differentiation. And I'm just trying to explain this. I took two very early examples. The other example is there to explain that this differentiation is due to the interaction. Now, normally here, the little green bit is the normal differentiation. But if you take half the embryo off, you'll see that the green is spreading artifactually. And that is a demonstration that it's the rest of the embryo that is interacting and controlling where the differentiation takes place. Now, at the very earliest stages of development, it's quite clear, isn't it, that there must be cells whose progeny will give rise to the entire animal. What isn't self-evident is that such cells can be isolated and grow. And it was the biology of mouse teratocarcinomas that led us to this discovery of such cells, which were called, or are now called, ES cells. In the teratoma, they're embryonal carcinoma, or EC cells. Teratomas are teratocarcinomas, are really quite peculiar tumors. Most tumors, most cancers, are a sort of caricature of the tissue they came from, a sort of wash of rapidly growing and invading and uninteresting, in many cases, cells. The teratocarcinomas, on the other hand, are also rapidly growing tumors. They're malignant tumors. They can be transplanted from animal to animal. But they have within them all a wide variety of different tissues, cartilage, bone, nervous tissue, skin, etc., etc. And these came from work that was done by Leroy Stevens, who found mice, an inbred strain of mice, with these tumors. He also did work looking at where the tumors came from and showed that he could induce them either by transplanting the primordial germ cells in the early mouse testis to another site in the mouse, or he could do that by taking an early embryo and putting it in a different site, thus raising the possibilities that these are tumors of cells that are yet still able to differentiate. And he quite presciently said, following repeated serial transplantations, these tumors have retained their pleomorphic character. Pluripotent embryonic cells appear to give rise to both rapidly dividing cells and the differentiated cells. So that's, as far as I know in the literature, the first description of pluripotential embryonic stem cells. It is actually a definition of a stem cell if you look at it. And Barry Pierce, who was not, I should say, Leroy Stevens was a mouse geneticist. Barry Pierce was a human pathologist, and he was particularly interested in that observation that Leroy Stevens had made, that the growing cells appear to be malignant, but the differentiated cells appear to have become benign. And he did, with one of his students, the vital experiment that demonstrated that indeed it wasn't just a matter of looking at these in the histology and assuming that there was a stem cell population in there, but there really was. What he did was clone the tumors. He transplanted not a lump of tissue, but a single cell. And when he transplanted a single cell, he was able to recover tumors with a wide variety of differentiation, hence proving that that single cell was an example of a pluripotential stem cell. Now, that's roughly when I came into the picture, because I was interested in seeing if I could get a developmental system in tissue culture. And, of course, in those days, you could make cultures relatively easily from tumors. It was actually, in those days, very difficult to make good tissue cultures from normal cells. So I thought, these are tumors, no problem, we can get them. And indeed, I did that, and very rapidly was able to isolate colonies of cells which they could be repeatedly cloned, but on reintroduction into a mouse produced teratomas. Okay? So we had the stem cells in culture. Now, clearly we want to see, this was an effort to get a differentiation system, that we could study differentiation in culture. They develop and differentiate in a tumor, as I've just said. Also, most dramatically, and in collaboration with Richard Gardner and Gini Papianu, we injected some of these cells from the tumor, grown in tissue culture, into mouse blastocysts. I told you very briefly just now that you can test the ability to differentiate of a cell by putting it into a blastocyst. This was a technique that was really pioneered by Richard. And when we did this with these cells, they indeed made some pretty normal mice. Pretty normal mice in which really most of the tissues had quite large contributions from the cells in culture. So these cells were able to differentiate in the context of an embryo. We'd also be very pleased if they could differentiate in tissue culture. And indeed, after a bit of trial and error, we found techniques where they could. So you could either grow a clone of these cells and let it get extremely big and globby and overgrown in culture, and then suddenly, to your surprise, you'd see beating muscle, and you would see nerve, and you would see magnificent differentiation. Or you could grow a mass culture, let it go through a crisis, and from in that crisis, it would produce these little clumps of cells, which we knew from the tumors were called embryoid bodies, very like an embryo, and those put down again in another petri dish would differentiate. And the picture on the right there is a section of a tumor, or actually, it's a section of cells on a petri dish. It could, might as well be a section of a tumor, because histologically, it's almost identical. You can see all the different types of tissue in it. So they did their stuff. But how did they do it? Now, one of the huge conceptual breakthroughs, and it seems very simple now, it absolutely, you wouldn't call it a surprise, but it was a real breakthrough. These were tumor cells. These were abnormal cells. These were cells that were probably pooping off suddenly into a differentiated state. Suddenly we saw that actually they were going through a normal pathway. On the left here is a diagram of what happens in the normal mouse embryo a little bit later on. The inner cell mass that I mentioned to you before will form all of the mouse, and if you isolate it, it'll form an embryoid body like this on the bottom. Our tissue cultures formed similar embryoid bodies. Oh, now we understand that these cells are trying to be embryo cells. They're going through an embryo form of differentiation. Nowadays, as I say, not a surprise. Of course, that's the program in the genes, is to go through embryo stages and go through all the interactions to differentiate. But then, a surprise. Oh, these are actually embryo cells, not tumor cells. And we had a situation where we now had cells, we could get cells from the tumors into culture. We could get culture cells back into tumors. They would go through an embryoid differentiation. They could be put into a normal embryo and go into a mouse. And, of course, those tumors could actually be formed by transplanting an embryo ectopically. So all of those interrelationships were there, and we could grow them in culture very well. We had the conditions going. So why couldn't we grow them directly from the embryo? It's about nearly 5 years before we managed to do it, and we managed to do it together with Mark Kaufman. What we did was to take these blastocysts, which are actually larger than normal. They've been delayed in implantation. Just a trick, an embryo trick. It was helpful, but it's not actually necessary. And when you put them out, you can see them starting to grow out in culture. and the knob of cells in the middle is the inner cell mass. That's going to grow out. I can pick it and transplant it, and I will get cultures of it like that, little knobby cultures to start with, but the cells will soon flatten out rather better and become established in culture.
Im D-Radio-Wissen-Hörsaal hören Sie heute den Medizin-Nobelpreisträger Sir Martin John Evans mit seinem Vortrag The Lability of the Differentiated State, also die Labilität des differenzierten Zustandes. Gehalten hat er diesen Vortrag im Rahmen des 61. Nobelpreisträgertreffens in Lindau, und zwar am 29. Juni dieses Jahres. Nach dem Jingle geht es direkt weiter.
D-Radio Wissen. Hörsaal.
So we had those cells. Now, the interesting thing is that, of course, we already knew if these cells coming out from the embryo really were embryonic stem cells, really were the stem cells that we knew and loved from teratocarcinomas, then all of the properties were predicted. And this is a page from my notebook at the time where I wrote down what we needed to do. Thoughts on Embryo Cells, it's entitled. We needed to inject them into mice. Well, they produced beautiful teratomas when we did. It'd be nice to know, are they normal karyotypically? The cells from tumors typically have a nearly normal karyotype, nearly normal chromosome constitution, but usually a few translocations and very often slightly aneuploid. These, on the other hand, were, as far as we could see, 100% normal. This is a male. We'd also had females, although the female cells, the XX cells, turn out to be slightly unstable because the X chromosome is maintained active in embryonic stem cells at this stage. And that means that it's unbalanced chromosomally, and there's effectively a somatic cell genetic way of getting rid of this imbalance, and that is by either losing one of the two X chromosomes or, most interestingly, partially deleting up to the X inactivation center. Can we clone them? Yes, no problem. In vitro differentiation, fantastic. Much better than before. Here's some nerve cells. You can see beating muscle. You can see everything. And there's another example of the section that we can take. So what if we do the experiment of putting them into the blastocyst? This picture is Liz Robertson, whose skilled hands are operating the pipette here. There they are in the blastocyst, put it into uterus, let it grow up, and here you have a chimeric mouse. This is a little male mouse who was made from a blastocyst from a pure breeding white mouse line. You can see already that he's got both a black and brown coat color and a darkened eye color. Those are just visual markers from the cells injected. But if we look internally, everything is mixed. Everything is chimeric. And most importantly, he and some of his colleagues also have chimerism in the testis and are able to form functional sperm. And therefore, we can go from the culture right through to the normal animal, and then we can breed from it. So we started off with ES cells as a developmental concept, pluripotential cells in culture. They've given us at least two opportunities. We can look at their differentiation, study differentiation here, the original aim. We also have the opportunity to do a genetic engineering in mice, as I shall show you in a moment. Now, what are they? I'd like to just question what are these cells, and some recent work we've done, or it's taken us a long time, but we have been doing it. Are these cells an artifact of culture? Or are they absolutely normal cells that happen to be able to grow in culture under the conditions we've got? And we've chosen, there's a number of ways of answering this, but we've chosen to look at expression array of cDNA. And I just point out that Matt and I originally, when we were discussing what we were doing, pointed out that actually we didn't think that we would get cells from the inner cell mass. We thought that we would probably get cells from the immediately post-implanted embryo. There were numbers of markers that suggested that. So we took these stages. The bits in purple are the samples we took. a delayed blastocyst over there, diagrams of embryos here, did a cDNA array, very carefully set up so it's actually arrayed against a mixture of the same samples. So we're looking very carefully for differences. And if you ask the computer the result, you get this sort of cladistic tree. It's very difficult to see exactly why, but I noticed that the, here we are, the IMT11, which is actually the ES cell line here, is closer to 5.5-day embryonic epiblast than to anything else. Now, it's a bit difficult to know quite how robust the computer is, but there's a very human way of looking at it, just do these scatter diagrams, where you're looking at log ratio against log intensity of each spot and looking for significant differences from normal or from a match. And you see that although here the ES cell against delayed ICM at 136 days is not bad, so the delayed is a bit of a match, you see the most remarkable match, and it really is remarkable. Very few significantly different spots, and many of those, I won't show you, but many of those are actually gene loci we know, and they're a bit upregulated, some of them, because they are actually loci involved in maintenance of pluripotency. So probably we've been selecting a bit in culture. These are long-term cultures, but we're comparing them against absolutely fresh out of the mouse embryos. So where do they come from? They actually come from there. Now, the genetic engineering, we can make germline chimerism. So unlike in the normal embryo, where there may be some one or two dozen stem cells for the embryo, we can now grow in culture tens, or indeed, if we really push it, hundreds of millions of these cells, each one of which, and we can maintain them in a situation where every one of those could go through into the germline of a mouse. That means that you can select rare variants, particularly genetic variants. The first one we did was HPRT. Then that's pretty easy because you can select it. Very few you can select in culture. What about insertion mutagenesis? When we started this, somebody yesterday or the day before, I think it was Oliver, said, oh, you must remember that there was a time when we didn't have the gene sequences. We didn't have cloning. When we were doing this, we had cloning. We had very few gene sequences. Very little genetic gene sequence of the mouse was available. So the way to go forward to find mutation was to do a mutation in these cells and then see if we could see something in the mice. Here's an example where we looked for insertions that could not breed to homozygosity. We found one, which is actually a gene which we now know as nodal, very early expression which organizes the axis of the embryo. We can look for overt phenotypes, one we call bulgy eye here. I could tell you what it's all about, but we can look for it in traps where we're looking at the expression. But of course, along came Oliver Smithies, Marek Pecky, with their ability to change, target a change in the chromosome genes in cells in tissue culture. That's the thing which is needed. We can now target anything we like, absolutely anything we like. So I'm going to give you one example out of several that we've done, and of course, probably about 5,000 that have been done across the world now of experimental knockouts and designer gene changes in mice. One of the things we did was cystic fibrosis. As you know, cystic fibrosis is an inherited disease in man, and there's one particular locus, one particular gene, delta F508, which is deletion of one triplet and hence one amino acid. We made mice modeled, and we showed in the mice, both in the null mice and in the delta F508, that we could restore function in the mouse by a fairly simple gene therapy, putting back cDNA. So can we do that in humans? The answer is yes, we can. And if you look at this top diagram here, the green line are a series of normal individuals, and these are voltages across the membrane in the nose. One of them is me, a lot of other people as well. The red line as a number of cystic fibrosis patients. And the bottom diagram is the two sides of a patient's nose, both before treatment, the lower lines, and after treatment, the red lines. And you can see that it does actually work. Long way off. Now, I chose this because I wanted to stretch your minds and say, why is there cystic fibrosis? Why do we have it? Is there a Darwinian explanation? Is it resistance to disease? Well, possibly it could be resistance to typhoid. Typhoid gives a huge flux. If you're minus minus CF, you don't have that flux. But you have to look at selection in the heterozygote, not in the wild type. And we could find no difference physiologically between the heterozygous and the wild type. However, Salmonella typhi, the human pathogen, uses CFTR as the binding site. And interestingly, the delta F508 is expressed as a protein, goes to the cell surface, and the Salmonella needs a cooperative binding to bind. And here we can show, and this is in our mice, that, of course, there's no binding in the minus-minus, the homozygous, but it's down by about 70% in the heterozygous. Very likely, right. Now, how about the human ES cells? The human ES cells have come in because, really, there's an opportunity of using this in vitro differentiation to get any cell type you want, and probably any intermediate cell type you want, possibly for cell therapies. So the scenario is that you have a patient, my patient here has had a heart attack. Maybe we can take from her an oocyte, put them together by cell nuclear transplantation, get an ES cell culture, not yet been done in humans, done in mice. Of course, that will have to be differentiated then into a suitable precursor. Heart muscle is very easy to do. And then maybe she can be cured. Well, let's just look at that again. We need a bit of magic. We can't go through these embryo manipulations. And so we need to be able to reprogram cells. And there, for a long time, we talked about this. This is a diagram I published a long time ago showing all the various things that we knew that were stabilizing the differentiated state. And of course, one of them is transcription factors. Yamanaka has shown that a cocktail of three transcription factors can differentiate back. Now, this is interesting because we now have the situation on my diagram of IPS, induced pluripotent cells. That's taking absolutely from the end right back to the beginning. It's a colossal change in cell phenotype. Very good, but what about the other small change that I suggested was blocked? That maybe can be induced. And we shouldn't be so surprised that maybe there can be transdifferentiation. We have known about transdifferentiation in developmental biology for a long, long time. This is a paper of 1973, a beautiful paper by Aguchi and Okada, showing that you can clone the pigmented retinal cells in chick, and you can see the clone growing up at a pigmented clone, but later this culture will spontaneously change into eye lens with all the crystallines. You can induce differentiation. Once again, the older one was c-MYC. You could treat fibroblasts, and this was Weintraub's work, you could treat fibroblasts with a cDNA which would make them become muscle cells. There are more recent direct reprogramming, some with a single transcription factor, but more with a collection of transcription factors, which is really Yamanaka's big breakthrough, using numbers of them at the same time. So I wanted to finish off by saying to you, the differentiated state is actually labile. It's labile in development. We now know that it's manipulable artificially. Therefore, we shouldn't be talking about the stability of the differentiated state. We should be talking about stabilization or change in the differentiated state. And I think this is bringing us a new idea into biology, and ideas, I think, are so important. Now, some advice to you. you mustn't necessarily believe anything. Nothing at all. Don't believe anything that any of us tell you, anything you read. You must find out. And this, of course, is the Royal Society's motto, nullius in verba. It's no good talking about it. Go out and look at the evidence. And I would just like to finish. I don't know if you've ever read J.P. Dunleavy's book. His eponymous hero, Balthazar B., had the motto, expect the unexpected. Expect the unexpected. And of course, Louis Pasteur said, and I've got the translation here, in the fields of observation, chance favors only the prepared mind. Are your minds prepared? Have you expected the unexpected? Did any of you see that was PC, but it was not properly spelled? No, not there. Come on, wake up. It was a test to see if you're awake after my talk. Thank you for listening, and just wake up in the future.
Also, wachen Sie auf. Diesen Appell gibt uns der Medizin-Nobelpreisträger Sir Martin John Evans mit auf den Weg. Sie hörten einen Vortrag über Zelldifferenzierung, ein Forschungsgebiet, das sicher noch viele Überraschungen in petto hat für jene, die tatsächlich die Augen offen halten für Unerwartetes. Gehalten hat Evans diesen Vortrag am 29. Juni 2011, und zwar im Rahmen des 61. Nobelpreisträgertreffens in Lindau.
D-Radio Wissen. Hörsaal.